Hello, everybody. I'm Tom Dorsey.
And I'm Sarah Bailey.
And it's the 28th of January, 2019. And I'm with my favorite podcaster right here. And we, you know, we come in and we said, let's go in and do a dry run. Let's talk about things. And, you know, we sit here maybe for half an hour going over different things that we want to talk about. But this morning, we did right between the eyes with something really cool that we have to talk about this. Mm-hmm. Because it has many applications going forward. It's something that just intoxicated me immediately. So I want you to start with what you did going down to your dad's this week.
Yeah, so this weekend I went to visit my dad down in Virginia Beach. And my dad is an extremely early adopter of technology. He's always been, you know, he's built my computers, went to Virginia Tech after New Mexico Military Institute for, you know, computer science. And
New Mexico Military Institute?
Yeah, you know, he went there. Yeah.
Oh, well, I wasn't sure of that, but wait a minute. I tried to get into New Mexico Military Institute.
Yeah, I knew that.
They wouldn't take me.
I know.
Oh, my Lord. That's a funny story. Back in El Paso, Texas,
yeah.
I actually tried to get into that school, mainly because I had a girlfriend in El Paso. I was like 15 years old, and I thought, this is true love. I have to be near her. Well, it didn't occur to me that if I went to New Mexico Military Institute, I have no car, I have no way to get to El Paso. Yeah. But that's a 15-year-old mind. Mm-hmm. My grades were so poor. I applied there. My dad, who was a career Army officer, was just happy as could be to get me in there. They wouldn't take me.
Well,
so I had to go to Germany. I enjoyed that better.
And it worked out. First grade probably wouldn't have been.
It worked out. That's right. That's right. DWA may not be here.
But yeah, so he, like I said, he's always been an early adopter. He was a 30-year officer in the military, in the Army. And through that kind of like the military intelligence stuff, always has used the 3D technology to always come home and tell us about it as much as he could, always secret stuff. But I've known that they've used this kind of technology for a while, you know, in the secret parts of the military. But anyway, I went home and he said, Sarah, put this on. And it was called the Oculus Rift. And we just looked it up. Oculus Rift is owned by a popular social media company that we all know. But what it is, it's a virtual reality headset. And I put it on, and he said, do you want to ride a roller coaster? And I said, okay. So I sat down, I put it on. At first, I didn't believe, you know, this isn't going to be really anything that crazy. And you adjust it, everything from spacing of your eyes, exactly. Sat down with two handhold things. The first thing I did is I had to pull, like, the lap belt, you know, the roller coaster up. And you kind of like feel it click, and I was like, oh my goodness. So
this is real.
I sat down, and I was sitting down. I wasn't like, you know, standing up or anything. My chair wasn't moving, but I felt like I was gonna fall out of the chair. So I asked my dad, please, whatever you do, just do not let me fall out of this chair. But the way that it, you know, makes you feel, you know, that you're going up, down. And this roller coaster, the track ends, so you're jumping and then you go underwater. So it's pretty crazy. But it's interesting to see that kind of technology is now making it into the home. You know, it does cost a little bit for that headset, but it connects with your computer.
It's only about $300-some.
Yeah.
Okay, it's affordable.
Yeah. And I was telling you that I walked in, I found my dad in his office just playing poker yesterday, and he said he was just playing virtual poker with real people, with some guys from Texas, and you know, just it's so different. And I've heard of, you know, virtual music festivals. I've heard of, you know, I think that there's just a lot in that space that we can, that I think we'll start to see evolving over the next few years. And I think, you know, we were looking up potential uses for it.
Yeah.
You know, other than just gaming.
Well, one of the things that I have had a passion for many, many years, but we've never brought it to the forefront, was creating a product for the blind and for the visually impaired. And the point and figure method is right down that line, because we have Steve in the late 90s, we created a situation where we had a female voice that could actually look at the chart, speak to you of exactly what she's seeing, and it was amazing. And I immediately thought right then, this is for the blind. Because with point and figure charting, I could explain to a person who was blind what a point and figure chart looked like. I don't know if there's on Braille, but I mean, in the mind to think about it. And then you could have someone who is explaining that this chart just broke a triple top and pulled back to support. All kinds of things. I could explain to you what I was seeing, and it would give you a visual. We never have come out with that, but you know, I think we really need to do something there. And then, with this powerful virtual reality, the visually impaired can, what we were looking at, can now see stars in the sky and whatnot.
Right, right.
So with this technology, this may really bring the visually impaired into our world. And I think this would be really cool.
Yeah, so we talked about that. And we also saw after some searching that, you know, it's gonna, you know, change how surgeons practice instead of on plastic models or cadavers, and about how people might, you know, go to flight school. You might just be able to do your flight simulator from home. You know, I remember back in the 90s, my dad was a pilot, and he traveled to Canada because that's where the big old flight simulator was at the time. So it's impressive to see where the technology has come since then.
Well, last Christmas Christmas before that, one of my presents was that I get an hour in a flight simulator, mm-hmm. because I love aviation, and I used to fly fixed wing back in the 60s. And I flew a plane into Mexico by accident. I mean, we had no technology back then, no virtual reality. I had sectional charts on my leg, and I got lost, and long story short, I ended up I had to put the plane down in Mexico. I was only an E3 in the Navy at that point in time, so that day was so expensive, I never flew again until I became a balloon pilot. And that was redemption to me, was becoming a balloon pilot. And I've never seen anything online that would teach someone to fly a balloon. But this virtual reality could very well, this could be it. Mm-hmm. I mean, because flying a balloon is much different than flying a plane. But, well, you really got me going here with this.
Yeah, I think some other things we talked about is just visiting places. You know, you don't really, you can use Google, I think Google Maps or Google Earth has a very impressive program so far. I'm pretty sure it's gonna, you know, get better over time, but where you can actually put yourself in Egypt, or, you know, visit a beach in Mexico, or, you know, and obviously it's not the same thing, but I think for those that are disabled, or those that maybe can't afford to travel or don't have the time, it's pretty, you know, interesting way to kind of go get educated, maybe even some, you know, historical landmarks and things like that.
I can think of someone who's disabled that probably traveling is out of the question, could go to bed at night thinking, you know, I'm going to take a trip to Kuala Lumpur tomorrow. And really look forward to that, and get into the virtual reality of being Kuala Lumpur. Mm-hmm. Boy, this is just amazing, all the different things that can be done. What else did we find? Did we find anything else?
So we also were talking just about how we could possibly apply it just to what we do, mm-hmm. and came out with two, I think, very different answers. The first one was, you know, we have our Brokers Institute coming up in the first week of May in Las Vegas. Registration is open, so if you have any questions, please reach out. But you know, maybe in the future, instead of having a, you know, an institute where everyone travels to, you know, one central place, everyone throws on a headset and, you know, changes maybe webinars, you know, instead of looking at a screen and hearing somebody on the phone, you're all virtually sitting around, you know, in a classroom or something.
And the money that would be saved for travel could go to owning the headset.
Right. So I was saying maybe it's even an ESG play down the line that's socially responsible. You know, if we're going to cut out travel and cut out, you know, things like that, maybe VR is looked at. I'll have to look into see if VR is considered.
What does ESG mean?
So the socially responsible, you know, investing. So like not investing in like gun companies, or not investing in, you know, just green investing, all that sort of thing. So it could be looked at as ESG play. We'll see. I'm doing a little more research into that soon. The other thing that we said was, maybe this is just a way for us to just, you know, put out the message of how simple what we do actually is. You know, in this world that's becoming more tech savvy and more complicated, and you have every single piece of information available, you know, at your fingertips, or even now, just visibly, what we do does not change. Right?
Exactly. All you do, you just make me smile when I look at you. You're the best. I mean, this is fantastic. That's a great idea, because what we do, when you think about it, you mentioned to me that you don't watch the news anymore because, you, number one, you can't believe what you hear, and it depresses you. And I haven't watched the news for 15 years. and I feel fine. I don't need to watch the news. But what we do, when the one thing that is reality is price. You know, so when you look at that point and figure chart and you come in and you look at that, that's reality. That's the important thing about it, because there's so many people, that everyone has an axe to grind. If you're on Facebook, if you're on Instagram, in anywhere, someone is trying to get you to invest in something for some reason. But when you come to the point and figure chart, it's simple, it's straightforward, it's X's and O's. Children can understand it, and it's reality. Mm-hmm. It's reality.
Yeah.
Let's look at reality for a second. And I don't want to go too long in the tooth, because I enjoy listening to you. Go to the implied momentum page. And what you're going to see here is the bell curve that's made up of bell curves of the S&P 500. So you take a stock that and it has its own bell curve, like I would look at United Technologies in zone 3. No, I'm not recommending, it's just a symbol. And in zone 3. And that is kind of in the center. But you look at some of the other ones skewed to the right. But if I look at the whole picture here, we're skewed to the right-hand side, almost to the point we were back in October of 2018. October of 2018, the vast majority of these symbols were skewed into zone 1, zone 2, zone 3. And each one of these, we call them zones, because standard deviation scares people. But these are standard deviations below trend. We have the same thing here. Not quite like that, because zone 6 is not filled up like zone was back then. If you pull up the implied momentum, you can change the date and go back and look and see exactly what it was in October or December or September and see how it has changed along the way. And if I looked at this right now and you said, what's the right strategy for this market, this overall market? There's no question in my mind, the right strategy is a covered right, plain and simple. 68% of the time, things are normal. They're in within the center. Now they're abnormal. They're skewed a little bit more to the right-hand side, which is the overbought side of the ledger. So then the question becomes, how do I buy a stock and skew it more to the left to bring it back in line with where it should be? And that's by selling a call against the position. So if I bought a stock at 30 and I sold a call against the position for 3, I've in essence paid 27. You've shifted that stock back down the bell curve and thus increased your probability of being successful in the trade. You need to learn options. Absolutely essential that you learn options. And how to use them in a most simplistic way, which primarily is in covered running.
Yeah, so to get to that implied momentum curve, it's off of your dashboard. So if you go to dashboard, you need to have the links of interest widget, which you can add by pushing that blue plus widget button, and then making sure you edit the links to show the implied momentum link. And so after you've done those steps, you know, from that day forward, you can just go simply to your dashboard and click on implied momentum. But that's the only way at this point to access that.
And you can change the dates on these. I was just trying to go back to see what changed. It automatically populated January 25th, 2019, so I don't want to take the time of re-putting it in. But that's an interesting thing to look at. The concept was created by Jimmy Yates of DWire and Associates, who wrote the book The Option Strategy Spectrum. It's out of print. It's an older book, but it's the book that I like the most on options. It really helps you understand how the normal distribution bell curve that you learned in Statistics 101 works.
I think this might be the last video that we do from this room.
Yeah, that's right.
We're moving.
Moving.
Well, in a few days we'll be in a new office, which we will let everyone know our new address. But
and everyone exciting. Here is going to love it. It's more of a millennial office. Mm-hmm. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, really excited.
Yeah. That's going to be great.
Cool.
Well, I'm telling you what. You get better and better and better.
Thanks, Judy.
I'll tell you. We'll see you next week.
Bye.